WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Texas National Guard troops are getting closer to Chicago. CBS News Chicago Sabrina Franza has spotted them in Elwood, Illinois, just over 50 miles southwest of the Windy City.
Being here outside of this facility, you can see on the uniform of these troops that they are from Texas. There's a big T on their sleeve.
Federal data obtained by CBS News shows that unlawful crossings at the U.S.-Mexico border have fallen to the lowest annual level in more than 50 years. CBS's Camilo Montoya Galvez.
Border Patrol over the past 8 months has averaged less than 9,000 apprehensions of migrants every 30 days.
Air traffic controllers are working without pay during the government shutdown, and air travel is being impacted as towers at several airports across the country are short-staffed. CBS's Chris Van Cleef.
It is not normal, but it also doesn't look to be a coordinated effort because it only takes one or two people calling in sick.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5. WFHR.
The Brewers win again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, it was the bottom of the first. The Brewers already losing to the Cubs 3-0 when Andrew Vaughn came to the plate. Two men on, coverage on TBS.
And it's a high fly ball to left field. Hap underneath it in front of the wall. This ball's gone! Andrew Vaughn ties the game with one swing. He's done it again.
The Brewers went on to win 7-3. Vaughn on what led to his three-run home run.
You know, William gets a huge hit. Yelly gets a huge hit. You know, I was just trying to keep the momentum going. You know, have a team at bat there. Definitely a big moment. The momentum swing, that was huge.
Game 3 is tomorrow afternoon at 4:08 at Wrigley Field. NBA, the Bucks with a 103-93 win over the Heat in Miami. But guard Cole Anthony had to leave the game after getting stitches in his chin.
Yeah, he's good. It was a deep cut, but he's good. I told him when you play defense, this stuff happens.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
At Boot Barn, we know you need a reliable work boot. A boot that has withstood the test of time. When you feed, build, and fuel the nation, you can't take chances. Because you wake before the sun rises and end the day after it sets. Dating back to 1892, Thoroughgood takes pride in building high-quality work boots designed for hardworking people. Because reliability comes first. Thoroughgood at Boot Barn Work.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Well, Donald Trump's not happy. Not happy at all. Claimed that Fox News, I'm guessing Fox News, is not putting up polls that correctly show him with a popularity of 65%. That's right. He is the most popular president outside of George W. Bush for about 10 minutes after 9/11. The most popular president in my lifetime. When the economy's in the tank. When you have the new CBS poll pointing out that nearly 60% of Americans say the economy's getting worse and 52% say the job market's bad. But 65%, they're saying, dear leader's awesome. We love dear leader. Now, the thing is I do remember back when Biden insisted that he saw polls that showed him ahead, even though it didn't really. They said, he's disconnected from reality. Gotta go. You know, kind of makes you wonder. Also, evidently Trump's saying that there's some shutdown talks going on with Democrats. He says that he's negotiations are going on with them. Could lead to very good things. Hopes for great health care. Even though Republicans have said repeatedly, no negotiations, until governments reopen. So who do you believe? I don't believe him. And also there was a South Carolina judge, her circuit judge, Diane Goldstein. Her house burned down recently after receiving death threats because, you know, she was critical of Trump. And this got me to and got a number of people thinking. Now, we've been thinking about, you know, the ramping up in violent rhetoric that's been coming our way. The talk of assaults, the talk of all kinds of stuff. And today I had a conversation with the folks at Free Speech TV, where we have our show every day at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And I got to tell you, I was proud of the folks at Free Speech TV. Because when they said, hey, we want to have a meeting with you, my thought was, this has got to be, hey, we're going to go duck and cover. We don't want to be too aggressive in calling out the chaos, the lies, the thievery, all of the stuff coming out of the Trump administration. I was kind of expecting, hey, you know, we don't have deep pockets like the big boys who are getting dinged for, you know, about $10, $20 million to line Trump's pockets. So I was kind of expecting, hey, Rick, you know, calm it down a little bit. Maybe talk about oranges. Maybe talk about, you know, puppies and kittens. But to their credit, they said, no, we're leaning in. We're going to continue to do what we do. We're going to continue to call out this administration for all of the things they're doing. We're going to continue to be the place for truth, regardless of the consequences. And I got to tell you, refreshing to hear that someone's going to go, look, we'll take the beating if it comes, but we're not cowering. Because this is what authoritarians, it's what they want. They want people to be fearful. And just having the conversation made me think, you know, people are fearful because they are. This administration is attacking people at every opportunity. And they've weaponized the Department of Justice. They've weaponized our government. They've weaponized the FCC against people like me and like, you know, people like Free Speech TV. So when I had the conversation, and I got to tell you, I was expecting, hey, Rick, you know, we're kind of going to duck and cover. We're going to keep the powder dry. I was expecting that. Not what I got. We're going to step it up. We're going to do more writing of op-eds. We're going to do more of bolstering our legal defense for when the trouble comes. Not that they're looking for trouble. And I asked the question, is this a matter of looking for trouble, or is this just a matter of... And they're like, no, we're not looking for anything, but we're not going to change because this administration is hostile to honesty. And I give them credit. I've never talked about, you know, my dealings with people in the business world, but to have them say, look, we're going to take this on if it comes, gave me some sense that there are people out there willing to stand up and fight back in this most critical of moments. Because this administration, right now, there are no guardrails. There's no one to tell this toddler no. There's no one, especially on the Republican side of things, who are going to restrain the worst instincts of not just Trump, but the think tank world that's been wet dreaming this stuff for decades. Because as I said for months now, Trump's not that bright. He knows how to package. He knows how to manipulate. He knows how to sell. But it's these guys who've been dreaming this stuff up that are finally getting the shot to do all the stuff that they've been dreaming to do to us. Not good. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back with Alex Lawson from Social Security Works.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, evidently, and this is one of the things that, you know, is quite remarkable. Evidently, we've basically fired everybody at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And evidently, there's a job that they do that's kind of important. September, they released the Consumer Price Index data, which, you know, measures the cost of living changes to things like, I don't know, Social Security. And I've read that there's one person left. One. And I got to tell you, there's part of me goes, I'm surprised they left one. And then there was part of me that goes, if you could get to that person, you know, maybe you could get a better increase. Or if they've already pledged loyalty to Dear Leader, it's going to be a very lean, lean future. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on with the shutdown, Social Security, and, you know, maybe what the future is for working people who are going to get screwed out of all of this. I've asked my good friend Alex Lawson to come share some thoughts. Alex is the executive director of Social Security Works. You can check out their website, socialsecurityworks.org. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Always my pleasure to be here, Rick.
So am I getting this right? There's one person left out of what, more than 2,000 people that work at the Bureau of Labor Statistics? One person that they've left.
You know, this is as you know, this is what Project 2025 laid out, right? It's the destruction of the administrative state. And when we would say that prior to the election, people were like, I think you're overblowing it. Nope. We are seeing this incredibly stupid libertarian authoritarianism, which, right? I mean, it's like this contradictory thing, but it's basically just getting rid of experts and expertise and replacing them with party ideologues. And what that means, or party partisans, I don't think they have an ideology. It's just, as you say, it's just whatever Dear Leader says. What that means is there's a lot of things that the government does that people just take for granted, right? Like, oh, well, yeah, there will be a COLA, cost of living adjustment, on Social Security. But behind that, there are an enormous amount of civil servants and labor that goes into doing that. And that is generally collecting an enormous amount of data about the prices of things and creating this basket of goods. You don't want to get like too in the weeds on how it's done, but it's all about having the ability to collect all this data. And right now, not just because of the shutdown, also because of the vicious assault on civil servants, which is what Project 2025 is all about. And the Trump shutdown is being weaponized, right? They're saying, we're going to fire workers. They don't have to fire anybody. This is their threat. They're saying, fund the government or we're going to fire everybody. And the Democrats are saying, you have to negotiate on a bipartisan. When you need Democratic votes to get something done, you need to actually negotiate with the Democrats. And that's what they haven't done right now. So, yes, it's true. We do not know if we will know what the COLA is. We do not know if it puts the COLA at risk. Is it going to be late? These are all questions that we don't actually have the answer to, because this is the first time our government has been under an assault like this.
Or is it going to be, you know, because when I saw that they basically let everybody go at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we're just going to start making stuff up. I mean, you know, the reality is Trump didn't like the bad numbers, fired the person who was in charge of it. If you don't like the news, kill the messenger. And this is just do away with all of the messaging apparatus and make up your own news.
I mean, you know, it's what strong men, you know, despots historically have done. It's Stalin-esque, I don't know, Putin-esque. You can go on and on. Orban has done the same thing in Hungary. The idea is that they just say what reality is, and it doesn't have to actually have anything to do with objective reality. The thing that I think is interesting, I don't know if you watch financial press, but the financial press, Wall Street is terrified of this destruction of expertise at BLS, at Department of Labor, for different reasons, because the entire financial system of the world depends on U.S. data when it comes to jobs, economic activity, all of these things, right? If you watch all of these announcements that drive the market. And now the question is, are any of these numbers real anymore, right? So can we actually trust the information coming from the U.S. government right now? And what I'm saying from Social Security side, right, being informed by what we're seeing there, is the answer is no, Rick. You build trust in years and you lose it in minutes, right? All of those old adages. The authority of the U.S. data has been the gold standard. And now people are like, nah, this is just another tin pot despot who is just calling it for political reasons, right? And that destruction, I don't think we can even comprehend the long-term effects of that because we're so mired in the short-term effects right now. Like, are people going to get their cola? Is the cola going to have anything to do with the prices that people are actually paying? And these are all answers we just don't know right now.
And you could go, this is really the beginning of the end of our position in the world. Because if nothing we do can be trusted, if our word doesn't matter, because I've been asking the question, which is more worthless, Trump's word or his signature? Because it doesn't seem like either matters. And yet here we are trying to reopen the government on funding that they may or may not honor.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's, you know, from in every sort of sphere, in diplomacy, in domestic policy, but across the board, when you know that the person on the other side of the table is at best a liar, right? You know, like the best case is that they're just a liar because they will lie for Donald Trump. But more often, they're an incompetent liar. And sometimes they're an incompetent liar who wants to see you dead. Right? They're driven by this just crazy fringe worldview where, you know, they believe that if they just rip healthcare away from millions of people and they just rip real wages away and they create this scrambling mass of cheap labor, then the billionaires will just have their little la-la land of gold-plated everything, and everyone else is going to be too poor and too much in the struggle to organize and fight back. And, you know, you can watch them doing this over time. But I do think that, you know, this is the part of me where I believe through adversity, solidarity grows. The truth is that all of those despot stories end the same way. At some point, the emperor is wearing no clothes and somebody points it out. At some point, you can't lie about what's going on and just expect reality to catch up. I'm sure you know this story, but just in case your listeners haven't heard it, one of the craziest stories from the Cold War was the fall of the Soviet Union was predicted not by any of the intelligence apparatus of the entire West, but it was predicted quite accurately by global public health organizations, the World Health Organizations and others, who kept putting out data, right? So it was data from a third party that was looking at life expectancy and all these other metrics and was like, this system can't keep going. And that's because they were looking at reality. And dear leader, just pretending that everything is fine, it doesn't go on forever. And I think what we're seeing is like an incredibly accelerated form of that, yeah, because the Trump administration is also looting everything so fast. They're wrecking things so fundamentally, like at Social Security Administration. This system is in absolute crisis. So they're out there saying, oh, everything's fine. It's so far from fine, Rick, that there's no way they're going to be able to keep this lie up for another few months.
But isn't that the right point? The point is we're saving it. We've got to destroy it first, but we're saving it.
I mean, I think that is where they're going to try to do the pirouette where, you know, they're going to say, oh, well, it's broken because it's the, you know, it was Obama's fault, or maybe they'll even go back. It was FDR's fault, but I'm here to save it. We're going to give it to our billionaire, in the billionaire who literally would be privatized Social Security. Frank Bisignano is the commissioner of Social Security right now. So it's like, they're not even trying to hide what it is that they're trying to do. Kneecap the mailman, complain that the mail is late, and then just happen to remember they have a cousin in the private mail delivery game. That's the entire con of privatization.
Just happen to remember. It's interesting you bring up Bisignano, though. It doesn't even new gig. I get the commissioner of Social Security, but you know, this is a multitasking, an efficient government, a business friendly corporate government. He's got a new gig, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's pretty great. I mean, like, you know, on the scale of things, there's so much happening, but the whole Social Security world took pause this morning when it was announced by the head of the Treasury that Frank Bisignano, who is the commissioner of Social Security, which is facing challenges, delays, disruptions of a scale that has never been seen before in the 90-year history of the program. And just this morning they announced, oh, and that guy, Frank Bisignano, he's also going to be the CEO of the IRS. So they're like, oh, yeah, we only need a part-time commissioner to oversee the controlled destruction of Social Security. We're going to bring him in to sit in this chair and I think probably implement the same controlled destruction at the IRS. And, you know, that's what's happening. Frank Bisignano has showed, you know, that he is part of this gang of looters whose total and you know, clear goal is the privatization, the looting of public resources for private profit. And he did it well at Social Security. So they're saying, okay, now you're also going to be the CEO of the IRS. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling that they're able to do this, but they're also, you know, they are sly in their way, because what that does, Rick, I'm sure you noticed, right, when you saw it, they did this to get around Senate confirmation, right? So they're like, get rid of the Constitution. We don't need to follow that. We'll just make up a new position, the CEO, that has all this authority but doesn't need Senate confirmation, because they know they couldn't get their wrecking crew through the Senate right now.
No, this is what running a government like a business gets you. You know, because as I was reading through this, I was going, you know, they do this to McDonald's workers, too, to get around the minimum wage. They just give them a new title. And then they can cheat that you-know-what out of them. And this guy, you know, because I was trying to figure out, we're going to be the CEO of the IRS, which, don't they already have a director and somebody who oversees this? But never mind. How do the two, because Social Security and the IRS, there's not a lot of play there, is there?
No, I mean, you're asking, like, is there efficiency here? It's sort of like, so the answer is no, there's no efficiency there. It's sort of like the quote unquote efficiency that private equity brings to things, right? Where they buy a bunch of companies, good US manufacturing companies, merge them all together, loot them all, and then declare bankruptcy, right? It's a classic mafia bust out strategy, just dressed up as business. And now they've been doing it in the private sector for decades, right? This is private equity. This is why everything is kind of terrible, right? Like, why are nursing homes terrible? Oh, because Wall Street and private equity got their hooks into it, and they don't build, they extract. And that's what Frank Bisignano has done at Social Security. He's not building, he's not fixing, he's breaking it up, he's busting it up so that they can privatize it, so that they can just extract money from it for into their pockets. And now they're putting them in place to do the same thing at the IRS.
Because I wanted to ask you about yesterday, we talked about this new policy that they're moving towards to change qualifications for Social Security disability benefits. They're eliminating age as a key factor to determine eligibility, which is going to harm people who are in their 50s and 60s, especially people who do manual labor, folks like me, who may at some point, two bad knees, two bad hips, you name all of this stuff. Now age is no longer part of this. And what it is, it's to get people to take Social Security earlier, so it's a lower amount, I think, to take retirement earlier, so they're poorer. We're making poverty great again just by destroying this program. And I think this is one of those issues that we should be talking a lot about, because I've often said Social Security isn't a retirement plan. It's an anti-poverty program. I took an entire segment of the population and moved them completely out of poverty when they were overwhelmingly in poverty before, and we're going to make that great again.
It is it's the greatest anti-poverty program in the history of the country. It prevents people from falling into poverty. That's the beauty of Social Security. It prevents people from falling into poverty. This is part, this section, I'll get quite angry here because this is going to kill people. This will kill people, and that's part of the design. Part of the design is exactly as you said, to push people to take retirement early. They get 30% less benefits, right? Catastrophically, just catastrophic destruction of people's financial security, because that Social Security check is for way too many people, but for tens of millions of people, that's the only income they have. And now for many of them, it's going to be 30% lower. And how did they do this? This is a Russell Vaught, Project 2025. You can read it. It's also a long-held dream of Heritage Foundation in general. And it's just one of the things. They're actually going to do more restrictions, which is just benefit cuts. They're just cutting our benefits. And like, think about what they're saying. They're saying that age is not a factor in health decisions. And you're like, come on, my man. Age is literally the biggest factor in health, right? Like when you go to the doctor, yes, obviously how old you are matters in every single thing concerning your medical situation. And these bureaucrats, these partisan Trumpists are just saying, yeah, we're just going to cross out age, right? Like age doesn't matter in your health outcomes anymore. So the ridiculousness of it. And my fear, Rick, is that people will just accept it. You know, that people will just be like, oh yeah, I guess that's just the way it is. If a person is working and has earned their Social Security and then they become disabled and can no longer work, oftentimes, as you noted, due to backbreaking labor for a career long, then they have earned their disability benefits, and they should be able to access those benefits that they've earned.
Absolutely.
And then when they hit full retirement age, it seamlessly transfers into retirement benefits. What they're trying to do, as you noted, is to get rid of that so that people claim retirement benefits early. But it sounds all wonky.
No, it's not wonky. It's not wonky at all. It's we're going to steal from working people so we can give tax breaks to rich people. This is just the one way that they're in our pocket. Massive redistribution of wealth from the work, especially the working poor, to billionaires who don't need it. And this is the amazing thing to me. You're right. I fear we're just going to put up with it because sadly we do. We're talking about taking, you know, health care away from children, food out of the mouths of children to give billionaires tax breaks. And yet we're taking it. But Alex, as always, I appreciate the work you do. Keep up the great stuff. And I hope you'll come back and keep me angry about what's going on.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Thanks so much. Our good friend, Alex Lawson, executive director there at Social Security Works, socialsecurityworks.org, the website. I want to hear your thoughts. Going to put up with it? Is this something that we just got to take it? Just got to take it. Just how it is. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Freeze warning overnight, mostly clear, areas of frost and lows in the low 30s. We'll look for sunshine for tomorrow, highs in the upper 50s, and continued warming for Thursday and Friday with sun, highs in the low 60s. Currently 51 degrees.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So the Trump Republican lockout is being used as planned. Look, Project 2025 was very clear. They had their playbook. You saw it, still voted for it. And the plan is gut investment in clean energy and technology. This was a premeditated move gamed out well before this election. And you know, I'll bet my bottom dollar it came out of the plethora of elitists who occupy our billionaire-funded think tanks that litter every state in this country. But people are fighting back. There's a coalition of clean energy groups, consumer advocates, and yes, labor unions, including the Rhode Island AFL-CIO, who have sued to restore billions that were already allocated for solar, the Solar for All program, about $7 billion. They are citing massive job losses and, of course, setbacks to the clean energy access for vulnerable communities. And here to share some thoughts on, well, why they jumped in the middle of this and what they kind of hope to get out of it. I've asked Patrick Corley to come talk with us. Patrick is the president of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. Patrick, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, happy to be here.
So let's start with why are you jumping in the middle of this? What's the reason?
Well, Rhode Island, we're a fighting state fed. I mean, we are not afraid to take on any challenges. And if we have to take on the federal government to make sure that our members are protected, we're going to do that. I mean, we signed on as a co-applicant with the state of Rhode Island to the Solar for All program, which, like you said, was going to provide $7 billion to the states around the country to provide solar panels for the residences of low and disadvantaged communities. And in Rhode Island, that would have meant $49 million that would have gone right into the workforce, solarizing houses and putting hundreds and hundreds of union members to work.
Before we get into the lawsuit and all that, what is the Solar for All program? So people get what we're talking about and understand what was taken away. Walk me through what it was.
So the Solar for All program was a project of the Biden administration. It was money that was funded through the Inflation Reduction Act, and it would have provided $7 billion to the states so they could stand up their own solar programs, specifically for people that might not otherwise be able to afford put solar on their houses. It was supposed to fund, you know, projects across as many states as possible and would have provided solar energy to 900,000 households across America. Now, just to put that in perspective, that would have been a $400 annual savings to the people that would have put these solar panels up on their houses. So this was about saving money for working class families, putting working class union members to jobs doing it, and reducing our carbon footprint substantially. I mean, a win-win-win all around.
Yeah. Which, again, you know, this is, you know, during the election, they were very clear, Patrick. They don't like windmills. They don't like solar panels. They don't like any of that stuff. And as you mentioned, it was part of the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, signed into law by Joe Biden. So it must be bad because, again, this president said anything that Biden did was bad. Anything he does is good. So what do you say, Patrick, to the person who goes, hey, this is why elections matter. Elections have consequences in our winner-take-all environment. And, well, you and your members lost.
Well, I would say you're absolutely right. Elections do have consequences. But there's a catch here. See, when Congress passed the BBB bill, the Big Billionaire Bailout Bill, and the president signed it into law on the 4th of July, that cut $16 billion in funding for clean energy projects. But there was a catch. What the bill said was that money that had already been committed to recipients or to specific projects was not to be touched. So what happened here, and what we allege, is that the EPA and the administrator, Secretary Lee Zeldin, went beyond what Congress had said that they were entitled to do. And that's what makes this lawsuit important, because it's not just what people voted for. It's saying that what the president and his administration is doing is exceeding even what Congress said they should do.
And it also solidifies the point that I've been making, that, you know, which is worse or more worthless, I guess, Donald Trump's word or his signature, because as you pointed out, this was part of their big, beautiful bill. They gave their word that they weren't going to do this. And then they decided, well, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, we saw this over the summer and not just that long ago, Rick, with the Revolution Wind Project. You know, this is a 1-2 punch to the people of Rhode Island. I mean, my members are taking the hit, sure, but it's the entire state that's getting punched in the head by this administration. And frankly, we're sick and tired of it, and we're not going to take it. That's why we're proud to say, you know, as the state federation, we're the lead plaintiff in this. So this isn't our attorney general. This isn't, you know, some high, you know, profile donor. This is the working class saying, we're not going to take this anymore, and we'll see you in court.
No, and that's an important distinction, because, you know, often there's, you know, we will sign on. There's an amicus brief. There's something that comes along. But this is labor being out in front, which is what I've been saying from the beginning. We need folks like you. We need the people who do the organizing to do the organizing and get people into the courts and into the streets. Because ultimately, this stuff trickles down to working people. And I like the way you phrased it in the piece, which is, this is about job losses. This is about people's livelihoods. This is about families. This is about, you know, communities having a tax base. There's a lot here that they just stripped away for punitive purposes.
Punitive purposes. And Rick, it's more jobs and lower cost energy. I mean, that's not a Republican issue. That's not a Democrat issue. That's just a good American issue. And it used to be the case that the Republican Party supported that. And it's incredibly frustrating to think that here we are supplying good paying jobs, union jobs, but not necessarily didn't have to be union, as long as they paid prevailing wage and as long as they utilized apprentices. I mean, this was about training the next generation of workers and lowering energy costs. You know, like we've talked about before, Rhode Island doesn't create any of its own energy. We import all of it. So by having a full range of options, you know, an all of the above approach, offshore wind, fossil fuels, solar energy, we're going to make sure that we're building jobs, but we're lowering the cost of electricity for every single person in Rhode Island.
Well, let me ask you this, because this was targeted at states that voted against Trump in the last election, or at least that's the way it appears. 16 Democratic states are the ones who are being targeted in this, Rhode Island being one of those states. And it was brought to my attention that, oddly enough, those states have higher union densities. So this seems to be, because these are union jobs, as you pointed out, seems to me given the fact that the big ugly ballroom is still being moved forward with non-union labor, it seems to me that this is just classic Trump-esque union busting.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's one of the things that I think we're trying to get across to our members and, you know, working class people across the country, is that what this guy says and what he does are two different things. And working people are catching the brunt of this chaos that's coming out of Washington. But the only way to stand up to it is to work with local unions, work with our state federations, our international unions, and work together across, you know, jurisdictional lines and make sure that the members are front and center in this fight.
Let me ask you, because, you know, the reality is, as you point out, these are really good jobs. I don't think people understand just how good of the jobs these are. We talked not too long ago about the wind project that's going on. Those are going to be, you know, all kinds of union laborers and electricians and pipe fitters and steel workers and all kinds of people doing jobs that are going to put food on the table. Walk me through some of the jobs that are now going to be on hold, potentially lost, and what that's going to mean in dollars and cents for local communities, for the local school base, you know, for all of that. Because what we know is these investments have a reverberation effect across the broader community, not just for the individual who has the good job, but for everyone. This is that rising tide in the boat thing that we keep hearing about, and they just sunk it.
They're trying to sink it. We're not going to let them. But to your question, I mean, when you're thinking about a solar panel and you know, installation, it's not just the electrician who's going up there and wiring the machines. You know, it's also laborers who are clearing fields to put solar panels on. It's Teamsters who are delivering the panels. It's operating engineers who are using the heavy-duty cranes to move these things around. So, I mean, there's a wide range of skills and crafts that are associated with the solar industry. And you're right. Those jobs are good, middle-class, good-paying, working-class jobs. They allow people to buy their own homes. They allow people to be active in their community. They increase the tax base. And they make sure that that money stays in the local community. You know our members, Rick. You know, we're going to go to the local pizza shop. We're going to go to the local bar and have, you know, beer and wings while we're watching the football game. We're going to spend that money in the local community. That's going to benefit all of us across Rhode Island and across the whole country. That's why making sure that working class people have a decent standard of living is a good way to run an economy.
No, as I talked about earlier, the latest poll come out by CBS News is almost 60% of Americans say the economy is getting worse, and 52% describe the job market as bad. When you have those kind of polling numbers and you ask the average person at the diner, how you doing? Nobody's jumping for joy in this Trump economy. And this was supposed to be all about cheaper eggs and cheap gas and cheaper rent and insurance coming down and all of this. That hasn't happened. So I got to ask you, when you're talking to union members, you know, as you're going through your travels, what are they feeling? Because understand the Republicans are making a solid play for union members and saying, hey, we're the party of the working class. What are you getting?
We're getting a lot of, yeah, we should have listened to you. You know, listen, we're a blue state here in Rhode Island. Most of our union members voted for the Democratic ticket, and they voted, you know, with their unions, but not everyone. And I think a lot of the people who did vote for the Trump administration are starting to rethink exactly what their position was. You know, maybe some of the other issues that were distracting them or were front on their mind, you know, was the reason why they pulled the lever for him. But now that they're seeing the everyday consequences, you know, no one likes to see, you know, armed agents walking around in masks on the streets of this country. It doesn't matter what party you are. No one likes that. It's frightening. It's scary. It's not American. And now when they're seeing the grocery bills go up and their electricity bills go up and jobs disappear, you know, people are starting to come to the awareness that, you know what? What we're doing isn't working. Maybe if we stick together in solidarity with the union, and, you know, whether you're union members or not, you know, I get a lot of calls today from people that are non-union members when they saw the news about the lawsuit, who are really happy that the, you know, the labor movement here in Rhode Island was taking a bold step forward.
So let me ask you, since you took the first step, are the other states considering the same kind of thing? Where I live here in Pennsylvania, you know, all across the country, are you seeing state feds who are considering the same thing that you're doing?
Well, I don't know if they're going to consider a lawsuit, but I know they're looking at the ways that they can fight back. You know, I have the opportunity to speak with my, you know, fellow state Fed presidents on a regular basis. And they're all struggling as best as they can to form the resistance that's necessary to the Trump administration, whether they're doing protests or picket lines or, you know, other kinds of solidarity actions with people that are impacted by this. You know, I think that's the thing about this. You know, it just so happens that Rhode Island, you know, we were one of the few state feds that signed on to this grant program. And we've had a good deal of success in the courts, you know, taking on the Trump administration. So it was a perfect match from a strategic point of view for us to get involved. But I'm proud of the way, you know, my colleagues and my sisters and brothers and siblings are fighting the Trump administration.
What more needs to be done? I mean, the reality is it's chaos every day. There are 10 things that keeps getting slipped by. But the message for me anyway is, while all this chaos is going on, they're robbing working people blind. Whether it's, you know, Frank Bisignano, the commissioner of Social Security, now the CEO of the IRS, or this, it's bad. It's chaotic, and it's not bringing down the price of eggs. It's not helping working families. This is bad stuff. How do you take advantage of that?
Well, first, we got to acknowledge that the labor movement was built for times like this. I mean, this is the time to be a union organizer. You know, we get to put theory into practice. We've always said that it's the labor movement that's going to protect American democracy. Well, it's time for us to step up to the plate. And I know we're doing it here. And I think we just need to make sure that we cut through the noise. Don't get distracted by, you know, the mainstream media and the people that want to divide us on all different kinds of issues. Stick with the workers, stick with the union, keep laser focused on what solidarity means, and we'll take on every fight that comes at us.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, clearly, the 18th of this month, you've got the No Kings rallies going on across the country, which I know labor is heavily involved in. You know, what's the message to working people, union, non-union? What's the message that you want to get out of all of this with the lawsuit, with the organizing going on? And what's the pull in?
The energy's on our side. You know, the other side are not putting 10,000 people in the street. The other side aren't putting 20,000 people marching down Broadway in Providence. It's us. It's the labor movement. It's the working class. We're the ones that are standing up. We're the ones that are saying to our fellow Rhode Islanders and our fellow Americans, you're not alone. There are thousands upon hundreds of thousands of us who want to protect American democracy. They want to protect good jobs. They want to make sure that our Constitution stands for something. It's so easy to feel isolated these days, but we're not alone. There are millions of us across this country that are willing to stand up and fight, and damn it, we're going to do it.
There you go. I've always said, if you want to reunite this country, you reunionize it. Bring people back together to shoulder in between in the middle of the street, and you guys are doing some of that. And Patrick, good on you for stepping forward and taking this on. Wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and give us good news down the road.
I will, Rick. Thank you. Anytime.
Thanks so much. Patrick Crawley, president of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you think other state feds are going to jump in the middle of this? Do you think other groups? I sure hope so. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. That was the day that thousands of people marched on Washington, D.C. to protest against homelessness. They gathered to protest against massive cuts in federal housing funding. President Reagan had cut the budget of the Department of Housing and Urban Development in half. The protesters hoped President George H.W. Bush would change this course. They called their protest Housing Now. Estimates of the crowd ranged from 40,000 to more than 200,000. The New York Times described those who participated writing, quote, "They came from as far away as Miami and Beverly Hills, Memphis and Portland, Oregon. Some had walked from New York City. They included homeless men and women, families who rent but can't afford to buy homes, state and local officials, and prominent figures. A delegation of 500 homeless people and allies came on buses from Chicago. They were joined by famous participants that included Coretta Scott King, Susan Sarandon, and a performance by Stevie Wonder. Union members also joined the protest. One of the participants interviewed by the New York Times was a 24-year-old apprentice with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Cassandra Benton told the paper, quote, "Hopefully, now they will see everyone is united. They'll stop spending so much on weapons and other countries." During the protest, musician Tracy Chapman played her Revolution song, a fitting song for the event. According to the National Alliance to End Homelessness, in January 2015, more than 500,000 people were homeless in the United States.
While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Got to tell you, good on Patrick Crawley and the folks at the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. And look, as I said to Patrick, if we're going to reunite this country, we've got to reunionize it. You got to give people hope and opportunity. You got to give people the sense of empowerment, the sense of belonging to something that matters. The right has done an amazing job of organizing people in their worst interests. I mean, I look at these groups that the billionaires have funded for decades. It's never about how we're going to make working people's lives better. It's about how are we going to restrain government from actually doing any good, which is a weird moment because we're in right now, because you've got Republicans out there talking about how, you know, we need to get government back open so it can do the things that it does. You know, the things that they're usually railing against. So it just shows these folks are they're heartless, they're soulless, but they're also void of any real believability. I mean, it's quite remarkable where we're at. And again, I've had people go, you know, did you really think we would see all of the things? I'm going, yeah, I did. And I actually am telling you right now, it's going to get worse before it gets any better. For instance, on Monday, you had Trump say that, you know, he may invoke the Insurrection Act. If the federal courts say that he can't send National Guard into to Portland from somewhere else, like they're doing in Illinois. Stop and think about this for a minute. And this is one of those moments where I think back to, and I've told this story before, election night 2016. I was watching at a watch party with a fairly conservative, you know, operative. He ran campaigns and stuff. And when Hillary lost, he turned to me and he goes, "It's going to be interesting watching Democrats become states' rights people. It's going to be interesting watching you guys turn into tenthers." Because he understood, like no one else really in the room, that Trump was going to consolidate power. Even back then, the difference back then was is Trump was still chaotic. He was on his own and didn't have the intelligentsia behind him. Now he's got the entire think tank world all lined up. Every one of those people that have been paid huge money to dream up bad ideas by billionaires, with no restraints, with no one to say, that's a bad idea. This is what we're living through. So to see this coming through, I saw they're sending the Texas National Guard into Illinois. This is what they want to do. And a federal judge declined blocking the deployment of the Texas National Guard into Illinois. The governor there, J.B. Pritzker, has said it's unconstitutional. It's an unconstitutional invasion. But the judge's ruling gonna allow it to happen. And this is one of those things where I'm going, Republican friend, remember when you used to believe in states' rights? Remember when that was the sacrosanct thing that, you know, you didn't want the federal government infringing on your state's rights? Well, here we are. You've got a president who is using National Guard troops from another state to go into, well, it's a blue state, you know. So I guess it's okay. And as I was talking this through with friends, I said, you know, what would have happened had Obama, for instance, said, we're going to send the Illinois National Guard into, oh, I don't know, Kentucky, Mississippi, West Virginia, you know, really poor states, welfare states, states that are going to be harmed massively by the Medicaid cuts that Republicans are putting on them. What if Obama said, we're going to go over, we're going to protect those citizens? What do you think the Republicans would have done? They would have lost their ever-loving freaking minds. You know that. But here we are in this moment. And I say good. As I spoke with Patrick Crawley a moment ago, elections have consequences. And we evidently didn't listen as a nation. So what we get is what we see every day in the news. Masked marauders running around snatching people off the streets. A federal government running wild. And understand, my Republican red hat friends, cheer if you will. There may be a Democrat who has a spine. There may be a Democrat who goes, well, we got to swing the pendulum back. And we've got to do the things that, well, maybe that you thought Obama was doing to you. Thought, imagined, fantasized, but not in reality. We are seeing history. This is an era that our grandchildren will learn about. Because these days, these moments, right now, are going to dictate the course of this country for the next 20, 30, 50, 100 years. And will you be able to say with a straight face, with an honest face, I did something to stop it? I was on the right side of history. Or will you be like, well, we didn't know. I was too busy watching American Idol, eating Cheetos. We're in interesting times, which is why on October 18th, you've got the No Kings rallies going on all across the country. And good, it's about time. It's about time we get people out in the streets. We should be doing more of it. We should have more demonstrations. We should have more organizing opportunities. Because look, they are going to overreach. Eventually, it's going to get too far. Do even the red hats go, wait a minute, that's too far. Even they will realize that the Kool-Aid has been tainted. And then there will be an opportunity to make this country in an image that we're proud of. I'll tell you, I woke up this morning scared. I saw a Department of Homeland Security video where the guy's talking about, you know, we're out there with masked people, snatching people off the street. We're out there fighting for the America we want. And I couldn't get that image out of my head of, you know, this is the America that they want. One where people can be disappeared. One where we take health care from people. One where we take Social Security away from the disabled. Where we kick the downtrodden. We steal from the poor. The country they want. And I got to ask, working class of America, is this the country you want? Are you seeing something that you would be proud to pass on to your children and grandchildren? Is this the legacy that you want left in your name? Because they're doing all of this in your name, in my name. And if we don't take this moment to speak up, to stand up, history will remember us. So I'm going to finish where I started. good on the people at Free Speech TV for saying that they've got the courage to stand up in this moment and not cower in fear and not back down to what is a tyrannical administration. An administration that is fomenting fear at every opportunity. Good on them and everyone taking that stand. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Texas National Guard members arrive in Illinois. CBS News Chicago Sabrina Franza says they're at a U.S. Army Reserve Training Center about 50 miles southwest of Chicago.
Being here outside of this facility, you can see on the uniform of these troops that they are from Texas. There's a big T on their sleeve.
Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has traveled to Portland, Oregon to visit an ICE facility while a federal lawsuit over National Guard deployment continues to unfold. Protester Nefrater Shade in Portland.
It's dangerous because, like I said, you're taking away the few avenues we have to peacefully fight back. And he wants us to get violent because he wants to enact martial law.
There's uncertainty about whether or not furloughed federal workers will get back pay.
There are some people that really don't deserve to be taken care of, and we'll take care of them in a different way.